My name is Michelle Owu, and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 2nd of September 2009, and the time is now 4:21 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age, and where you're from, please?
My name is Corinne Harrison, I'm 25, and I'm from Bushey Heath in Hertfordshire.
Hello.
Hello.
And how are you feeling at the moment?
I'm okay, less nervous than I thought I would be. But I think I'm getting excited to go on.
Did you get any sleep last night?
I got a full hour. I thought it was quite impressive. I thought I was just going to oversleep. You know, you go to bed at your normal time and think, I know I have to be up at midnight, bizarrely. So I set alarms on every side to make sure I woke up. I'm amazed I actually fell asleep and wasn't just waiting for that alarm to go off.
How did you get here?
I took a taxi. I was going to brave the night bus because I'm currently living in Oval and I thought better of it.
Can you remember how you first heard about this project?
I work at the National Portrait Gallery and I've worked at other galleries and so I've been aware of the fourth plinth for a while, and we were asked to be stand-ins, so I volunteered for that, and then I got picked anyway, which was unexpected. So it was a nice surprise.
When did you find out you had a place?
I think it must have been at least a month ago now. Immediately told everybody I knew, and lots of discussions in the pub with people coming up with suggestions, and people were more excited than I thought they would be, and you know, came up with lots of interesting ideas, and also it seems to have crossed generations. Like my parents, you know, immediately told everybody, and my grandparents told everybody, and they're all, my grandma rather, and all their friends are very excited when I saw them at my grandma's 80th birthday party. And my mum said to me, you know, she always thought my brother, who's an actuary and, well, training to be an actuary and going to earn lots of money, would always be the child that she could boast about. But no, apparently working in the arts gives her much more kudos, and because she only knows accountants and solicitors and estate agents. So they're like, art, wow.
Why did you think it was something you might want to take part in?
I like the fact that the fourth plinth has been, different things have been up there, and it's, you know, surrounded by all the static statues, and it's been good to see original artworks up there, and the idea of having living people on the plinth, you know, it's such a subversive idea, and to have something constantly changing, you know, negating that need to actually have to make a decision to pick one person over everybody else in history who's made a contribution, and highlighting that everybody has made some small contribution in some way. And yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Have you thought about how you might spend your time on the plinth?
Well, going through various suggestions, two people suggested I shave my head on the plinth. I don't know why. But my favourite idea had to be making a fort out of cardboard. Initially it was toilet rolls, and I realised I couldn't collect enough to make that work. So I've made things out of cardboard shoeboxes in the past, so I thought shoeboxes are the way to go.
What kind of things have you been making with shoeboxes?
I worked at an art gallery called the Barber Institute in Birmingham, and I worked in various departments, including the education department, and one of my tasks was to come up with a summer activity, bearing in mind we had no money left by the end of this year. So I discovered I could get shoeboxes for free if I just went to shoe shops and asked them if they had them. And so after lots of brainstorming and going back to my line manager, was like, it's good, but try again. I finally came up with the idea of making a Venetian canal, because it was to go with our exhibition at the time, which was Italy versus the Netherlands, and I had, so I'd picked the Italy side. And so each child had an individual box, and I'd made accessories so that they could foot in the water and little boats and lights, because I discovered that when you cut up a shoebox, it nearly falls apart, and a little stream of lights held them together quite nicely. And then we put them all together at the end, and we had one long Venetian canal with every child had made a little section of it. So I've always liked that idea. I've liked how well it works, and so shoeboxes, that's been the key.
And where did the idea come from for the fort?
Oh, conversations down the pub. That's where that was also the shaving the head idea, and various dressing up things came out of that. You know, Napoleon and I can't remember what else now. Napoleon sticks out, but I think I've seen a few Napoleons on the plinth so far.
And you've also brought along something else that you're going to wear.
I don't know if I want to say. I brought a colander. It seemed like a really good idea at the time. I basically have been sitting up, you know, sitting on the bus thinking, what else can I do with my fort? And with various leftover bits. So I brought tinfoil, and I might make a sword as well. It depends on how much time I have and how far things, the wind doesn't take everything off the plinth and I'm halfway through.
How long have you been at the National Portrait Gallery?
I guess I've been there 8 months now. I started in January.
Were you in the gallery in Birmingham before moving down here?
No, I did an MA in History of Art at UCL, and I worked for an arts marketing company before that called Maurice Hargreaves Macintyre. So that gave me an opportunity to go into lots of different galleries and go visit exhibitions almost on a daily basis. And I seem to do less now, you know. I get involved in a lot of the portrait galleries activities, but I don't go out to see what other museums and galleries are doing so much anymore. So it's nice to branch out, even though this is part of the portrait gallery as well.
Perhaps you'd like to expand on what the role is, what the link is, rather, between the National Portrait Gallery and this project.
I feel ashamed to admit I'm not entirely sure. I know that we were asked to. We have a screen in our foyer where so you can watch the people on the plinth on the screen. I know that our director got called up as. I think quite a few members of staff have gone up so far. It's not wildly representational of the general public, but these things happen.
Tell me a little bit more about your day-to-day role within the gallery.
I'm a print cataloguer, so the Portrait Gallery's collection is organised by the name of the sitter, alphabetically by surname or by title if they have one, and then the prints in the reference collection in the archive and library is then divided into size, so we have standard size engravings and large engravings, and I catalogue the large engravings, and I started at G in January and I'm now almost through H 8 months later. I'm almost up to 1,000 prints, and I think I've made a small dent in that collection, but I'm only there for 2 years, so I don't know if I'll see the end of that.
What happens after the 2 year?
I think my post is funded by charitable funding, so when that money runs out, unless they find the money elsewhere from elsewhere to keep me, I'll have to move onwards and upwards, as they say.
What was your special area of interest when you were doing the MA?
I picked two courses. One was Dutch 17th century art, and the other was called something like travel, tourism, and I can't now remember the third thing, but essentially it was looking at imperialism and Indian art and British reactions to Indian art, which was really interesting. It could not have been further from what I'm doing now, so the interview was interesting when I said I'm very interested in portraiture, which was true, and then when they asked me, so what do you know about British portraiture, and I had to admit, I really don't know anything, because I've not studied it in my 4 years of education, postgraduate education.
What do you think swung it at the interview?
I was enthusiastic, I know that always helps, and I've used the computer system before, which helps, And you know, I am, and I think just having a general interest in portraiture was very important.
Do you have any favourite pictures in the gallery?
Oh, now I feel like I'm in that interview again.
Sorry.
Well, I've grown to appreciate works on paper, which you don't really get to see much of in the gallery. You know, you see the paintings from the primary collection and more modern contemporary artworks in different media, but paper comes out and rarely in some small exhibitions or small displays, as they're called in the gallery. So, and I do like our Gilray caricatures, which are just so cruel and bright on the button.
Do you remember when you first became interested in art?
It was quite late, really. I was always good at art at school, but I had the feeling by the time I got to A level that I wasn't really going to make a career out of it. But I still wanted it to be part of my life. So I thought I'd wanted to do an art history degree, and I went to Birmingham and did English and History of Art there. And Birmingham has its own art gallery on the campus called the Barber Institute, and I'd volunteered when I was at school, and so I volunteered there when I was a student, and that really made me think, oh, galleries and museums, because my parents freely admit to not being gallery or museum people, so I never really went much when I was younger, and it was only really while I was a student at Birmingham, and I think only by my third year did I think this is what I want to do, especially since the gallery offered a job posting, which was a training position where you got to work in the education department, marketing and curatorial for a whole year, learning how a gallery works. And it was a great training scheme. You know, I learned so much and got to curate a small exhibition of prints, and way ahead of my time for at the age of, I must have been 22 or so. And unfortunately, they no longer run this program. The girls that replaced me and the other gallery assistants were then offered permanent jobs. Yes, well, I was slightly disappointed when I first heard, but at the same time, I thought if they'd offered it to me, I would never have left. I was so happy there. But you have to move on eventually, don't you?
Do you think museums have changed very much over the last few years in terms of presenting their collections and the accessibility of those collections?
It's certainly helped that in the past 10 years museums and galleries have been free, but I think, you know, museums and galleries are facing a real struggle, you know, with the Olympics, because we're under the umbrella of Department of Culture, Media and Sport. We're feeling the pinch from that, and I don't think people are quite aware of just how much, you know, how many jobs are being lost, how tightly budgets are being squeezed, and how this affects, you know, the long-term running of galleries and museums. And you know, they've always had to deal with having less money than other institutions, and I think they'll bounce back, but I think it's going to be very hard in the next few years.
What do you like to do when you're not working?
Ooh, as my mother says, it's a bit of a busman's holiday, and I like to go visit museums and galleries. I've been recently living with a friend in London, so we like to just go exploring London and you know, scouring time out for alternative nights, and we discovered one of the favourite things that we discovered was the cellar door at Zero Aldwych, which is a converted men's toilet where Oscar Wilde used to pick up boys, and it's now a bar. and who knew? We have a lot of fun in there.
What's it like?
It's really nice. It's small, about the size of the room we're in now, but with an ample bar and mirrored walls and you know, a few tables dotted around, and they even squeeze a band into a corner some nights, and it's a lot of fun. They have exciting toilet doors which are clear until you lock them, and then they become opaque. So yeah, so it's things like that. You know, you can, I think you can live in London all your life and still there's always something to discover.
How did you come across it in Time Out?
Yeah, I think my friend just was scouring alternative nights and she came across that. Can't remember exactly what the night we went to was called. But someone called Kitty Leroy was playing. It was a lot of fun.
Do you have any reservations about doing this tonight, this morning?
Yes, yeah. I guess for me personally, it's being on a small space and not being able to get on and off as I please, and that makes me feel very nervous, if I'm honest. And I like to know that I can move about. I could, if I really thought I had to, I could get off. but no. But then it is only for an hour, and an hour in reality is not a very long time.
What's important to you in life at the moment, would you say?
Well, up until recently, been, you know, establishing a career in the arts, and I feel like I'm on my way. You know, I've got my foot in the door, and so I realised that having got there, I sort of very involved in the gallery and its work, and I've let some things slip. You know, when I was a student, when I lived in Birmingham, I think coming to London or coming back to London, I thought, good Lord, everything's expensive and everything's so far away. I was, you know, at the university in Birmingham working on the campus. I could go do French classes in the evenings, exercise classes, massage classes as a student as well for a couple of pounds an hour, which of course you can't really do in London. So I objected to doing these things in London, thinking because they costed so much more, which is a real shame to stop doing things like learning languages. So I'll get back into that, I think. But above all of that, probably my family are very important to me, and I think they'll be. My mother is very technical minded, while my dad isn't. But I think they'll be watching on the internet this morning. Which, yeah.
Are you going into work tomorrow?
Oh no, I've taken the day off. There's just no point.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I guess I think I wrote in my original blurb all these high-minded things about raising money for charities and raising awareness of things like particularly multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's, because my mother suffers from MS and my grandfather suffered from Parkinson's before he died, and I think we're very unaware of, you know, we're all living longer, and I think don't quite realise that how important quality of life is, and to see Parkinson's, to see MS is changes your view. My mother says I've got a very unusual view because I've seen my grandparents grow to an old age, and whereas she didn't, you know, that wasn't something she experienced. But I, at the same time, they're all very proud. They wouldn't want me to really sort of advertise this that too much, because, you know, they told me, you know, you have to go live your life, and I think that was something that was very important to tell me, because otherwise I think I just would have worried too much, and it stops you just getting on with things.
So who are you doing this for tonight, this morning?
I'm building a fort. I'm doing it for myself, aren't I? But my, I liked that my mother is watching, and I like that my grandma's very excited, and that's important.
Did you choose three words on your, you know, on your blurb, as you call it?
Yeah, I think it was "feed me cake." I was sitting with my housemate, and I said, three words describe me. She said, "feed me cake," and I think, yeah, I like cake. I like baking. And I thought that was a nice summation of something silly, something a bit more fun after my thinking I really should be serious for a minute and stop playing around with shoeboxes and forts and considering whether or not I should make a sword out of tin foil or not.
They're nice decisions to have to make for a change.
I think I'm like this far too often, to be honest. Well, I think I think about, you know, a lot of the hard decisions have seemed to have passed. You know, I'm now 25. I've done 2 degrees. I finally got a job. This is actually my birthday was a few days ago, and I realised it's the first birthday I've had where I've actually been at work. I've just either been studying or a job's finished or in the summer. I'm 25, and that's the first time I've been at work on my birthday. It's, yeah. So it's so serious during the day, but
fun by night.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.